This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to cook for you. Hey, y'all, we're yamming it up this week with sweet potatoes, candied, roasted, or baked into a pie. Yams are Louisiana's sweetest potatoes. Join me, Chef John Foles, and Mavis Finger of the LSU Ag Center as we talk about sweet potatoes on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news. Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you around the kitchen table with us today. It's a beautiful morning for us here, and if it's afternoon in your world, well, you must be on the other side. That's what I'm just thinking, Michelle. Anyway, I want to begin by welcoming Michelle York, our executive producer. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking.
Well, good.
Sweet potato season.
Yeah, sweet potato. I love sweet potatoes. I was in a conversation about it just a while ago about being in China. Remind me to tell you that story about standing in line getting a sweet potato in Beijing.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to tell you about it. It's a great story. And across the glass wall, of course, can't throw a sweet potato through that glass to wake up Dan over there. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, hey, guys. So wait, you're telling me there were sweet potatoes in China?
What? You better believe it. Remind me about that story because fascinating as most of my stories are.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and just jump right
on
in?
Well, no, because we got to get started on a big show that people don't know until now. We're talking about sweet potatoes. But I have a story. See, your story on sweet potatoes is when they're coming out of the oven. John, so I could eat one. My story is like being in China with a sweet potato.
And I'm glad you know that question. So where are they?
Yeah, where are the sweet potatoes?
Anyway, you doing all right?
I am. I'm doing very well this beautiful fall day.
Yeah, it is very, very nice.
Healthy eating's agreeing with me.
Is it?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, you know, we did that show just recently with the ladies over from Sandra's Cafe.
I wanted to go see those girls over in Lafayette.
I know. We still have to go.
I make these plans, great plans, you know, and I look forward to it. And I think to myself, I work, and I'm surrounded by this talented staff. Who should say, you know, why don't we take John? You know, he really wants to go meet these people. Why don't we just ask him to go for a ride?
What are they
thinking? Well, you know, their lives are complicated, too. You know,
we all in this
I mean,
together.
I'm sure we all got home together at the same time as I drove into my driveway at midnight last night.
Exactly at midnight. So when would he have gone to Lafayette?
Thursday, Wednesday.
No. You want me to break out the calendar?
I have a chicken house over at White Oak Farm. Yeah.
Did they start laying?
All Heritage Breeze. They hadn't started laying yet. So
they're
behind. Well, you know what? I started to throw some flax and millet in there. That's right, because I started to read the effects that flax and millet have on you, and it really helps
makes you lay
digest
eggs.
And makes you lay eggs. So I thought I'll throw some of that in there. My chickens are ready. They're just running about a week behind.
Oh, boy.
We got to check things out around there. Anyway, now I'm just harassing you about your flax and millet. I think it's great. In fact, millet makes the best roux. Millet flour makes the best roux for anybody who is gluten-free.
I think we had a Facebook question on that.
We sure did.
Millet flour, I'm going to tell you right now, that's the best one. Makes a beautiful dark, and it doesn't have any off flavors, and it's gluten-free. So it makes a perfect gumbo. And you know what I tell people?
You made gumbo with it?
Sure.
How come you didn't bring us some to try?
Well, I didn't know you needed any.
So you can just get ground up millet?
Oh, yeah, you go to all the big box stores. Everybody has it.
That aisle just keeps growing and growing at the grocery store. It used to be one little half section.
I'm going to tell you, I'm confused about it all. I'm just from another age, you know, like my daddy used to say. I was either
born 100 years too early or 100 years too late. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. Pretty soon with all that bird seed you eat, and I don't want you to start chirping around here. You know what I But you know, this is Louisiana, and we do grow one of the healthiest foods. And we are, look, let me tell you, nobody grows more gardens. Nobody grows more fresh, beautiful food along the bayous and riverbanks than South Louisianians. And one of the greatest and healthiest things we grow is the Louisiana sweet potato, or the yams, as many people call it. Not only are they great, not only delicious, they're loaded with all these great vitamins. There's absolutely no fat. I could go on and on. I've always been an advocate, a proponent to eating a lot of sweet potatoes. In fact, Michelle, my greatest memory is walking into the house and on Cabanossi Plantation as a young little child, and Mary Fascio, that beautiful cook, would have on the table this gigantic platter of hot sweet potatoes that had just come out of the oven in time for the school bus to drop off this horde of Vikings called the Ball Children as we attacked the sweet potatoes. And somebody asked me one day, well, what did you put on them? I said, what did we put on them? I tell you what we put on them. We ripped the skin off if we felt like it. We jumped right into eating them. We had no time for butter or syrup. That was just a distraction on a good sweet potato.
Well, you know, but it was a good after-school snack.
Oh, they're full of vitamin C and E.
That's right. My grandmother used to say that that's what they would have as a snack in the
Everybody
afternoon if you were hungry.
Well, it was sweet. Mm-hmm. It was sugary and all of that. But they're very healthy. All kidding aside, they lower cholesterol. They have those mm-hmm. magical antioxidant properties that we hear so much about. They're very versatile. You can cook them savory or sweet, which
That's
I love.
Right.
The name can be a little confusing, though. The term yam actually comes to us from the African slaves, who kind of thought our softer orange flesh sweet potato resemble that African root vegetable they call nyame. Nyame, the name sort of evolved from there into yam. Yams and sweet potatoes are both flowering plants, but come from two different botanical families. Yams are related to lilies and grasses, while the yellow-fleshed sweet potatoes come from the morning glory family.
You know, you're talking about sweet potatoes. They actually have a long history. They can be traced back to Peru as early as 750 BC. And, of course, with the discovery of the New World, they became part of the Columbian Exchange of Foods.
Oh, I love that statement, Columbian Exchange. Back and forth, back and forth.
Yep.
As my Mama Falls used to say, she was French. She'd say, forth and back, forth and back. Everything in French is backwards, you know what I mean?
Anyway, the Columbian Exchange, and yeah, a lot of new exotic flavors found their way to Europe. Sweet potatoes were the first potato to actually be taken back to Europe by Christopher Columbus. He discovered them growing in Haiti, and of course, quickly became a, you know, top of the chart vegetable. Sweet, very versatile in cooking, fantastic.
You see, again, Christopher Columbus was eating them because they were sweet, just like we did.
That's right. When he got home after exploring, he had sweet potatoes. And that's the facts, I'm sure. You know, the famous late 16th century herbalist John Gerard wrote about the sweet potato in a book entitled Herbal. He described the many ways that you could prepare and eat them. He wrote, they are used to be roasted. Dress them with oil, vinegar, and salt. They comfort, nourish, and strengthen the body.
Huh. And you know that George Washington Carver found that sweet potatoes grew well in the soil that was worn out from cotton production, that once you all the nutrients were gone, you planted those sweet potatoes, and they would grow well. He also developed about 100 byproducts from sweet potato, ranging from glue to flour, starch, vinegar, and about 500 shades of dye, if you can imagine
Good
that,
night.
Came from the sweet potato as well. The biggest crop production for the Louisiana sweet potato industry came in the 1930s after a bad cotton crop prompted a lot of the farmers to plant sweet potatoes, and 10 years later, over 125,000 acres of land were planted in sweet potato for harvesting, and that's in the 1930s. At that time, Louisiana was growing the deep orange-colored, that very moist Puerto Rican variety. And in the 50s, the USDA passed a ruling allowing Louisiana's orange-colored sweet potato to be called a yam to distinguish it from that yellow-colored, drier sweet potato grown on the East Coast. So that was a great thing Louisiana did to go to USDA to say, we want to differentiate that beautiful rich, deep orange color, almost red color Puerto Rican variety, and they gave it to us. So it was clever thinking and resulted in the term yam being the unofficial trademark of Louisiana-grown sweet potatoes. So whenever you see Louisiana yams or these companies that have yam all over their cans, it's basically a marketing term to say that Louisiana Puerto Rican variety is different from the sweet potatoes of the coast, but they're not true yams.
In 1987, LSU, remember, they developed the Beauregard.
Oh, I love that little sweet potato, that Beauregard. It's one of my favorite, by the way, and it's small, you know.
Yeah, number one choice.
I wish we had those when we lived at home, because with Mary Fesher would watch how we ate the sweet potato, but with the Beauregard, it was the right size to hide in your pocket. You could put a sweet potato in your pocket because it was small, a little Beauregard.
So you ate one and stole one.
Oh, you ate one and stole one. I'd have got you. 1987, though, I had graduated already.
Well, I would hope so. But the Beauregard was the number one choice. You know, there's some tough competition in the sweet potato industry, though. California, Mississippi, they both give us a good run for the money. But North Carolina,
North Carolina.
Pretty hot on our heels.
They're tearing us up.
In 2005, two sweet potato breeders there developed the Covington. They developed the Covington in response to the success of our Beauregard.
They ain't going to do nothing with it, though. Beauregard's the best.
They both have a sweet, delicious flesh.
Yeah, but can the Covington fit in your pocket?
Can
the Covington fit in your pocket? That's the question.
That's the test.
That's the ultimate test. We'll have
For
to get
all
some...
kids growing up now, you want to make sure it fit in your pocket.
Well, I'm going to have to test it out.
But y'all have no fear. The ball is back in our court in 2007 when LSU scored again with the development of, oh, my God, a sweet potato named after my favorite girlfriend, Evangeline. Yeah, absolutely. Beauregard is a great sweet potato with a subtle flavor that's delicious, roasted or baked and served with pork, you know, alongside. I love to take the Beauregard and just cook it in a simple syrup with nothing but a little butter. But the Evangeline, can you believe this? 10% more sugar, which makes it so much better for the candied yam that you like so much when we go eat at the table. It's Brad, in Baton Rouge, huh? Guess what?
Must be Evangeline.
No, it's got to be Evangeline. 10% sweeter because it has 10% more sugar.
And they're delicious.
Oh, my God. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do, though. I'm a skeptic. I'm going to take that Beauregard and I'm going to cook it next to the Evangeline. I'm going to let y'all do a little taste test.
Well, look, you got two more varieties LSU's developed.
I know.
The reddish purple skin, it's called LA07-146.
Yeah, but I like the name Evangeline better than that. You know, it's easier to remember than LA07-146.
Well, how about this? They also have the beautiful rose-colored Orleans.
I know.
So, if we're going to do a taste test, we've got to be complete.
Yeah, we'd be blindfold. Don't worry about it. $80 million bucks to our state. Can you imagine? That's how much sweet potatoes bring.
That's unbelievable.
Y'all, we're talking about sweet potato from the reddish purple-skinned LA07-146 to the beautiful 10% sweeter Evangeline, depending on the size of your pocket.
They're making pockets shallower these days.
I know, that's what I say. So, boy, you better stick with Beauregards. Anyway, y'all, we're having fun. We're talking about one of our favorite subjects, the Louisiana yam, and now you know why. It's a marketing term, but when you say yam, they're the best, and they come from us. And in a little while, we're going to have someone who knows a lot more about LA07-146 than I'll ever know. So we're going to see you back here in a minute.
I got a sweet potato, it is steaming hot.
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds, both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays, here on KRVS.
The scene changes, but the tragedies of displaced people are replayed with each passing year. On the Thistle and Shamrock, hear songs that have always spoken for the emigrants' experience.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
From scenes I roamed boy. And long ago the hour I know I foresaw.
I love that, Slama. That's there a good song. That's a good song there right there. Is. Sweet is by Grandma's Sweet Potato Pie.
That's isn't sweet. That? Bet you they were using it evangelists.
Oh, no, I bet they had to be. They had to be. Anyway, welcome back, y'all. It's Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. I'm so excited to have all of you around the kitchen table today. Just pour yourself another hot cup of coffee because we have a great guest and a great topic. We're talking about sweet potatoes today. And Michelle, I keep saying I'm going to tell my story about China.
I know. You're just going to have to hold on for a little bit longer.
Okay, I'm going to hold on. That's what I say. I don't want to do it now because I don't want to.
We need to talk to Mavis.
I don't want to preempt my guest either by talking about my story. I'm going to do it in lieu of a recipe after a while.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead and introduce our guest. By the way, she's from Labadeville. You know where Labadeville is?
Yes, I do.
They call it Labadee.
Down the bayou.
Yeah, Labadee. That's us people who know on our way to Thibodeau. You know, if you need to stop and get a little a stage plank or a little piece of pastry, you can stop at the bakery in Labadee. You know, that's kind of a good stop.
I notice the stage planks never make their way back.
Stage planks and little honey buns and all, mm-hmm. They make them fresh over there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you.
Maybe we'll get a little gift box.
I'm going to show you a picture of it when I come.
Pictures about it, right.
Anyway, introduce our guest. We have a great one today.
Yes, we have Mavis Finger with us, LSU's new sweet potato extension specialist. Like you said, she's a native of Labadeville in Assumption Parish.
That's right.
She grew up there, very active in 4-H. You'll appreciate this now that you have chickens. She raised broilers. She had market lambs, helped her dad in the garden, grew up scouting the sugarcane fields with him while he was doing research for the Department of Agriculture. She actually credits her dad, as I'm sure she should, for her love of research
and the
passion that she has for watching things grow. She got her bachelor's degree in horticultural science from LSU, went on to earn a master's from the University of Georgia in plant pathology, and even though she had a great, promising future in Georgia, she's a Louisiana girl.
Well, of course, she had to miss us.
She's a Louisiana girl. She had to miss us. So she came back. Once she graduated, she returned to the LSU Ag Center at the Sweet Potato Research Station. She's hit the ground running, meeting the sweet potato producers here in the state, and we're just eager to hear what she's got to tell us. We've got to ask about that Louisiana 10240.
Yeah, well, no, that's, you got the wrong. You got the wrong. Anyway, Michelle, you know what I want to ask? I want to hire her. I want to
really?
Hire her. Look, she will be coming back to South Louisiana. She's up around Monroe right now.
Yeah, she's in the north.
And I want to bring her back home because I need a plant pathologist and I need somebody, you know that.
You right need a plant right pathologist.
I need somebody who can tell me why my melaton leaves are turning brown and all that kind of stuff. And why am I need somebody. I need Mavis is what I
Maybe
need.
She can come visit you when she comes home one weekend.
That's right. I promise you I'm going to do that.
Mavis,
I'm just going on air to say that right
Mavis,
now.
Mavis, let me introduce you to Chef John Foles.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
Mavis, I hate to put your job in jeopardy, but you never have to worry about work. I can tell you that. I have a place for you. I guarantee you that. So.
Well, that's a great offer.
Anyway, look, congratulations on your new position over at the Ag Center. I'd imagine that your dad must be unbelievably proud that you're following in his footsteps. How's things going over at the Sweet Potato Research Station?
Oh, I tell you, they're going absolutely great. The sweet potato community is just a very tight-knit group, and it's just a number of really exceptional people involved in this industry that thankfully work very well together. So I've enjoyed getting out there and meeting growers and industry members, and I'm just learning a lot, that's for sure.
So what happens at a research station? You know, I hear that all the time, whether it's sugarcane or rice or sweet potato. What do y'all do there?
At the Sweet Potato Research Station, for instance, we are solely focused on sweet potato research. So throughout the production of the crop, growers notice problems, you know, things will arise, and they relay that back to us, basically, and we're essentially trying to find solutions for them at these stations through research efforts. So, for instance, with insecticides, we're testing new insecticides to get them more effective products so that they can increase their production efforts.
Okay, and like if there's a lot of times you hear about a fungus or something that attaches to leaves. I don't know if that happens with sweet potatoes, but...
Yeah, exactly. We provide them kind of real-world solutions here. We're always looking for better ways to, you know, increase their profits and make them more efficient producers. So any way we can do that, we try and develop research efforts geared towards our producers.
So we were reading about new sweet potatoes. We were talking about the Beauregard. We were talking about the Evangeline. So do y'all actually work to develop a new variety?
Yes, actually, that's one of the big focuses of the Sweet Potato Research Station. We have a very active breeding program. Dr. Don Labonte heads that program, and he's actually released several new varieties that are really gaining popularity in the last few years.
So once he develops something, then y'all take a sample to farmers and they plant a few acres, see how they do?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's really an interesting process. It's really as much of an art as it is a science. And the whole process begins with selecting those thoroughbred varieties to cross in hopes that the offspring will be even better. So Dr. Labonte is selecting what varieties to cross. When he's selecting those varieties to cross, he is thinking about growers who want a sweet potato that has a nice shape and a high yield potential, but he's also thinking about consumers who want many of the same things the grower wants, but they also want a sweet potato that tastes really good.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Labonte is screening several thousands of potential new varieties at any given time. So the art there is knowing which ones to eliminate quickly and then which ones to hang on to.
Now, Mavis, one of the things that always interests me is the conversation about the origin of things. Can we go back to the beginning and tell us a little bit, just kind of clear up some of the mystery about the Louisiana sweet potato? When did it get here? How did it get here? Now, we know about the potatoes from Peru and all, but kind of, can you clear that up? Because there's more debates about the origin of a sweet potato, the origin of the yam, where did it come from, etc. Can you just kind of touch base on that for us?
Well, the Indians were growing and consuming the sweet potato before we even got here. So before Columbus even came over to the Americas, the sweet potato was already being consumed.
And what potato was that? I mean, when you go back in the lineage there, what was that? Was that a variety that's still around today, or is it was something that's faded away, or what?
It probably didn't look anything like what we're eating today. It probably was more white flesh potato that had a darker skin to it, but that's probably faded out now because our consumers today really demand something that's very, very sweet and moist. And what they were eating back then was probably something that was a lot drier and a lot more starchy in flavor.
So the Indians were actually consuming potatoes here, and I'm assuming that's at least a couple thousand years old in consumption of sweet potatoes by Native Americans here. So the sweet potato as we know it today has evolved, but kind of take us on that trek from the Indians till today quickly. I mean, how did it evolve? What was the first that we enjoyed? How does the African variety have anything to do with what we're doing here out of, say, Mexico or South America?
Well, it really started in the early 1900s at LSU as far as breeding programs are concerned with sweet potatoes. Julian C. Miller and his colleagues in the horticulture department at LSU really took it as an initiative to develop new sweet potato varieties. And from the 30s onward, they were marketing these new orange, sweet, moist flesh potatoes to consumers. And it really just kind of exploded from there. Beauregard came in around the 80s, and ever since then, we've just been developing new varieties to match with consumers' demand.
Well, that's pretty interesting because basically what I guess we're saying is that the Native Americans had maybe a white starchy potato that didn't resemble what we have. And that was kind of the way it was until probably the early 1900s. So is it safe to assume then, I'm not sure we can say, but assume that maybe there wasn't baked sweet potatoes on a Christmas table or Thanksgiving table prior to the 30s. It was kind of hit and miss.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically, I would think it probably was just maybe more of a novelty back then. You know, just a few people consuming it here and there. The excitement that's behind sweet potatoes that's present today really wasn't present back before the 1900s.
Wow, that's good to know. Okay.
You know, Mavis, we always like to refer to the LSU Ag Center website, especially when we're doing research for the show. They had a great video on there about all that goes into the planting and the harvesting of sweet potatoes. It's kind of not your typical put a seed in the ground kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about what's involved in planting a crop.
Sure. That really is a great video, too, and I certainly encourage folks to go view it. But that's correct. The crop is actually vegetatively propagated, meaning that those typical seeds are not used for planting. Instead, cuttings or slips, which are actually plant parts, are used to plant the crops. So ideally, the growers would start in about late March or April by planting seed roots, which are just essentially intact sweet potatoes in seed beds. So they're planting the seed roots in seed beds to produce these transplants. And then the transplants, which are typically called cuttings or slips, are then planted in about late April to May. And those cuttings or slips will establish roots after planting, and the sweet potatoes will develop from there. So typically, sweet potatoes will reach a harvestable size after about 90 to 120 days.
Now, I was reading somewhere about some of the new developments, and we mentioned some at the beginning of our dialogue as we opened the show. In the sweet potato world, you know, we were talking about Dr. Don Labonte's, I guess, Arlene's in L.A. 07146, and I see, so that's probably prior to just naming it some common name for the public. It has these numbers associated with it. Have they named it yet, or is it Arlene's, or is that another one?
No, Arlene's and L.A. 07146 are two different varieties. The exciting thing about L.A. 07146 is that it's kind of a unique situation there. It's licensed to ConAgra, and there's an interesting agreement there. Louisiana producers can grow and sell this variety in the fresh market, but our out-of-state producers would need a license to do so. But LA 07146 is just a very attractive sweet potato. It's got a beautiful red skin color to it, deep orange flesh inside, and it's very, very sweet. And I think we talked a little bit about Evangeline earlier. LA 07146 is on that level. It is just absolutely sweet and satisfying, and it just can't be beat. But the other thing that LA 07146 has going for it is that it's an exceptional yielder. And on average, we see about a 15 to 20% increase in yield from this variety as compared to Beauregard,
wow,
which is that industry standard. So it's just an outstanding performer, and it tastes absolutely exceptional, and it's just a really pretty potato.
And is it available to us as consumers?
Yes. Anyone in Louisiana can grow this variety at will and sell it within Louisiana.
Say if somebody was selling it, can they sell it in the store so we might find it there now?
Yes. If a store is willing to purchase it and sell it, you will find it there soon.
Okay, and it would be under a name, or will they name it prior to that, or will it remain that a number for a while?
Yeah, typically when the sweet potatoes go to a fresh market, they are named. We haven't quite gotten there with this variety, but a name is in development.
I'll throw Chef John Falls in there if you want. Michelle, that would sell something. I think that would sell something, put Chef John Falls' name on that. I'll tell you what.
Chef John Falls,
and
sweet
give it
potato.
To him. I'd give it to him. I wouldn't even charge.
Okay, I'm going to run that by Dr. Labonte.
You run by that by Dr. Labonte. They tell him, then I can cook them in my plant over there and sell them to the world. That's a good deal right there. No, I'd love to taste them, though. My God, I'm excited. I'd love to go find one right after the show.
I know. If they're in the stores, it probably just says Louisiana sweet potatoes or something.
You'll see them because it's a very pretty red skin color. You'll know that it's something a little bit unique about it.
I think I've seen them.
Because
she said it's kind of reddish mm-hmm. color, and I thought to myself, I've never seen that color on a sweet potato before. I don't remember where I saw it, though.
And you said to yourself, there's the little Chef John Falls potato.
That's what it should be called. you, you know, the process from trying to create something. My God, there must be so many. It interests me tremendously in what it takes to bring a product to market, because that's my business too. I'm in it. What's the process of trying to bring something to market like this LA07146? How long is that process normally take to go from conceptualization in the lab to the field to eventually putting a name onto it? What's normal?
Typically, it takes between 7 to 10 years.
Holy moly.
If we go back to what we mentioned a little bit earlier, Dr. Labonte is screening like several thousands of varieties at a time. And just the process of eliminating so many of those varieties and trying to find that one exceptional variety that has everything that consumers and producers are looking for, it just takes a very long time. And then they also have to be screened for susceptibility to a number of plant diseases and insect pests, and we need to find out whether they tolerate drought and flooding. So the process is just typically takes between 7 to 10 years.
Wow. Now, I know North Carolina used to be, I'm not sure, it is still our biggest competitor out there. Who are we competing against?
Well, North Carolina is still the leading producer of sweet potatoes in the United States, and they are actually followed by Mississippi, then California, and then Louisiana. So we're actually considered the fourth largest producer of sweet potatoes in the United States.
Now I know we have great companies like Bruce Foods. That's one of the, when I think of sweet potatoes and I think of canned and I think of not non-fresh, I'm always thinking of Bruce Foods first, because they certainly, the quality of the product they produce, etc. Why then is North Carolina the law? Is it land? Is it a quality of land? Is it wet versus dry? What makes Carolina the biggest? Do they have big plants there? What's going on that makes them number one?
Well, one thing that North Carolina has growing for that maybe Louisiana doesn't quite have is that in North Carolina, their soils are very, very sandy. And sweet potatoes really do well in a more sandy soil. So that's something that they really have going for them. And then, you know, they haven't been touched with those tropical storms and hurricanes in recent years like we have in Louisiana. And all of that kind of contributes to success in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, I know we really appreciate the time that you're spending with us and that's spent with us. We are lovers of sweet potatoes here in Louisiana. I would always consider, just by how many sweet potatoes I see on tables and buffet lines and hotels and restaurants, that we would be, if not the number one grower, the number one consumer. I would at least think. And Mavis, I want to thank you so much for sharing. We will put all of the information from the show today on our website. If y'all go to jfalls.com, you're going to find all of not only LSU's information, but the video information that we talked about, the varieties that we talked about as well. And I'm going to be on the hunt. And if anybody out there sees that red flesh sweet potato lurking in a grocery store, send me an email over here, because I want to go and taste it. So, Mavis, thanks for the great work that y'all do. I appreciate so much LSU and all of the great work that the stations do out there, because I know how hard y'all trying every single day to increase production, increase new varieties to the public, etc. And nobody does it better than LSU does. So thank y'all so much over there at Ag Centers. Okay.
Thank you, John. Okay. It was a pleasure.
Okay, and like I said, remember, you can come see me anytime. All right. All right, y'all. We're gonna be back in a minute, and of course, we're gonna be cooking sweet potatoes in here in a little bit more. I guess you got a couple of books on.
Of course
she does. Anyway, y'all, we'll be back in a minute.
Sweet potato, how do you do? I'm fresh from Decatur, looking for some sweet potato like you. Say, sweet potato, latch on, let's go.
Why support KRVS? Well, the effects of conflicts around the world continue to be felt at home and abroad. The national and local economic picture changes daily, and politics seem to be more polarized than ever. As a listener-supported radio station, the only way KRVS can keep you in the know on these and other important issues is with your financial gift. How much is up to you, but when you consider all that you enjoy and learn from KRVS, please give as generously as you can. call during the day, or make your pledge online at krvs.org.
Coming to a radio near you soon, African String Magic. We'll debut new albums by magicians of the Kora, Oud, and Cavaquinho, and talk with Toumani Diabaté live from Bamako, Mali. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRBS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Greetings. Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Some folks like their taters lining, some prefer French fries. But I like mine fixed with mayonnaise, coleslaw on the side. Solid potato salad, that's solid salad, Jack. Solid potato salad, boy, take a plate, fill it up, bring it right back. Solid potato salad.
Yeah, they just don't make them like they used to.
Man, I tell you what, that's something else. Solid potatoes. Anyway, welcome back, y'all, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting and cultural show on radio. I might mention, and that was great, you know, to talk to Mavis Finger. They do great work at these universities.
They really do.
And sometimes you wonder what these PhDs are sitting in these little labs with their white coats just planting 1,000 different sweet potatoes. But you know what? It's like creating a recipe that becomes a masterpiece.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you go through 1,000 of them, then you hit one, and there it is, and you wonder why I didn't do that. And that's probably what he did. That's what he did with his varieties, I'm sure. Evangeline, I can't wait to taste it. And I can't wait to taste 07147 or whatever it is. You know, I'm going to hunt it down. I can tell you that. Okay, Michelle, what about books on the subject?
Yes.
Worth sending our stove hounds out on a trek to find a book. Huh?
There's a book out. It's kind of a little bit storybook, little bit cookbook. It's called Well, Shut My Mouth, The Sweet Potatoes Restaurant Cookbook. Written by Stephanie Tyson. Stephanie's actually the co-owner of this little restaurant, Sweet Potatoes Restaurant, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And the book tells her story and how the restaurant came about, and full of her personal remembrances of her grandmother who influenced her cooking and friends, and a lot of humor, a lot of heart in this book. You'll also enjoy the delicious Southern recipes that are in there. Her restaurant's in the heart of the Arts District in Winston-Salem. And again, that's where this little cookbook found its origins.
Huh.
The second book I want to recommend is this little baby right here. Recipes from the Root Cellar. 270 Fresh Ways to Enjoy Winter Vegetables. It was written by Andrea Chessman. And, you know, I have to tell you, even though I love a cookbook full of glossy photos, and we certainly fill our cookbooks with photos, once in a while, you get a great book that's actually just recipes, and that's what it is. But, you know, don't judge a book by its lack of photos. This is excellent. She's written about favorite winter vegetables, mustard greens, dried beans, winter squashes, cabbages, of course, the sweet potato that we've been talking about today. About 16 recipes for sweet potatoes alone in there. These are the root vegetables that make you feel all warm and cozy on a chilly day. Chicken pot pie with sweet potato biscuits, pot roast with root vegetables. There's even a whole section dedicated to, ta-da, beans, rice, and healthy grains. Thank you very much.
There it is.
But it's a really good book to get you cooking. Healthy recipes, tummy-warming meals for the winter. We'll have the information on our website, both great additions to your culture and culinary library.
Yeah, but I love her spicy sweet potato oven fries.
Ooh, yes.
See that? That's oven fried. Yes. No, look, sweet potato, a little bit, just a quarter cup of oil, a little chili powder, sugar, onion powder, ground cumin. That sounds really good. A little allspice and cinnamon. Very nice.
That sounds very good.
Very, very good. Mashed sweet potatoes, maple candied sweet potatoes. Oh, I like this one. Cider braised sweet potato with apples.
That sounds delicious, too.
Oh, yeah, I might have to do something. A little rainy day, you know, getting into the
winter. I think it's supposed to rain today.
Getting into the winter season.
It doesn't ever rain.
I think it's raining. I think it's raining right now. Let's get some sweet potatoes.
We're going to get some. See, you always looking for somebody to do something for us. See, let's
well,
get some sweet
you know,
potatoes. What about our Facebook
our
page?
Internet footprint,
yeah,
y'all.
What about that? Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
We can go on Facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's without a G in stirring. And you can come on by and be our friend, as they like to say on Facebook. I think there are almost nearly 800 of us out there.
Well, around the cyber kitchen table.
Yeah.
But more than anything else, share your pictures with us.
Yeah,
share your table with us. I mean, that's what we're doing. If you go to our Facebook page, if you go to our website, jfalls.com, and you go to White Oak Farm, you can see the things we're doing with our pigs and chickens and gardens and everything else. So, I mean, we want to get the same thing from you. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, speaking of, Golden Delight Honey came on our page, and they had a little comment. They said back in either January or December, a couple years back, we sent a photographer out, Ron Manville, down to Baton Rouge to photograph the Golden Delight honeybee operation.
Right, right.
For an upcoming cookbook. And they were wondering if what cookbook that was.
What cookbook was that, Michelle?
That's the vegetable cookbook due out next year.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Due out next year.
A vegetable
cookbook.
Well,
it's certainly not coming out this year.
Or last year.
You know.
In the works.
We put out our books at Christmas.
Christmas time.
So our book will be out for Christmas next year. It's going to be a beautiful book. It's going to be all on vegetables. And it's going to be not only steamed vegetables.
No, indeed.
Because, I mean, people out there saying vegetables. Chef John Falls doing a vegetable
doing
book.
And not just fried. I mean, it's a good variety of techniques to use with the different vegetables that we have.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to
have
a large variety of vegetables.
We're going to have growing. Cool. We're going to have farms. We're going to have the most beautiful photography you've ever seen. We had our photographer traveling from New York to the toe of Barataria Bay.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Getting over the countryside.
We've got great farms. We've got great farmers markets. I mean, I'll tell you what, Michelle. Really, I'm not kidding. I think this book's going to be our most beautiful one.
I think it will be a beautiful one.
Visually, it's going to be incredible. I think it's going to be incredible.
Cool.
Anyway, that's what we're working on. Yeah, so you let them know that it's we hadn't come up with a name yet.
No, we have not.
So we can't get a title out of you?
No.
It's still top secret?
I came up with a name, but they shot me down.
Oh, no.
I was calling it the Veggie Table. That's what I thought.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
The Veggie Table.
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
Chef John Fulce's Veggie Table by Michelle Yark and Chef John Falls. How you like the ring of that?
I like the ring to
Yeah,
that.
You like that, huh?
I like
yeah,
the
yeah,
ring
right,
to
huh?
that.
Yeah, she likes her name on my covers because she writes just like about 400 or 500 pages she thinks she deserves.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. Only, huh?
Go figure. I'm so selfish.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and do it again. I'm going to do it for you. Don't worry about it, huh?
Hey,
the good news is I don't have to pay it for it.
We need to negotiate.
As much.
As I was saying, we have negotiations to get through.
Okay, y'all, let me tell Michelle, I want to tell you a story about my yams in China. In the mid-80s, I was invited to do a little restaurant jaunt in Beijing. And, of course, that was right after Nixon went in to open China. And, of course,
when were you there?
I was in the 80s, 1988 or so, 89 at the latest, I think. Just think about that. That was 20-something years ago. I went into China when Nixon had only been out of there by about 10 years. Because when I went into China, it was extremely primitive. Extremely. It's not the Shanghai of today, let me tell you, you know.
Yeah.
It was all the communal farms and all of that kind of stuff. But anyway, I went in to do a restaurant. And while there, of course, I became absolutely fascinated. You know how much I love history and beautiful, unique cultures. And spent about 2 weeks traveling the countryside of China from the Great Wall to the Temple of Heaven, Forbidden City, I mean, the white marble summer palace of the emperor, and I mean, the Ming Dynasty tombs. I mean, it was so fascinating, I can tell you. It's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime type thing. But what fascinated me most was coming to understand the habits of the people and how they shopped and how they ate. And, of course, I was in China during the wintertime, so you know what that means, sleet, rain, snow, cold, so cold you can see the sand, right? If you can think of Zhivago in Russia, wow, that's kind of what it looked like in China. But anyway, one particular Saturday morning, I went with my interpreter to a market to pick up a couple of things that I wanted to work with, and I noticed it was kind of sleeting that morning. It was very cold, and I noticed a line that wrapped all the way around this park, and I was thinking to myself, what are they doing there? You know, so I asked my interpreter, I said, what's going on? And she said, well, you see that barrel right there? And it was like an old, let's say a 55-gallon drum. Mm-hmm. And it was sitting on some cinder blocks with some coals. They did a lot of charcoal cooking over mm-hmm. there. So they had this coal fire going under this barrel. And the people were coming by with little children all wrapped up in fur. And all, you know, it was just freezing. And they got up to this barrel, and they would just give a little coin, and they'd reach into the barrel and give them something. I said, what is that? And she was trying to tell me, and she didn't know the name, you know, but mm-hmm. she says, you know, it's a potato. So as I could get closer to the barrel, and of course, being a Westerner, I want you to think about this. Let's say 1988, Beijing, in a marketplace about 6 in the morning, thousands of people. And here's this Westerner showing up in blue jeans, Reeboks. Mm-hmm. Imagine what I looked like as compared to all of these people in Mao suits, military. Oh, yeah, everybody was in the Mao suits at that time, you know, just kind of the smocks with the mm-hmm. pants. Everybody with the little caps on their head. Everybody looked identical. All the children, except for the military, and military was everywhere. So every step I took, there was like 10,000 eyes on me, you know, because yeah. I was just so foreign to what they were yeah. used to seeing, and I was in that market. So I was able to kind of walk up to get to the barrel, and the lines just kind of separated because they wanted to see me as much as I wanted to see what was in that barrel. And when I got there, I'll never forget the face of this lady who was only about 3'10" or something, you know, with this big beaming smile on her face. It was just, I can see her face right now as she reached in and handed me just up to my face. And I looked at her hand, I said, that's a sweet potato. And it was just cooking in that barrel, and it was hot. And I could see the mothers who were coming up taking two of the potatoes, one for them and one for their child, and putting it in the pockets. And it was, I said, it's to keep warm.
Oh, my gosh.
It's to keep warm in the market. They're putting their hands in their pocket on the hot sweet potato, and the babies, they'd take a little bite of it and put it in the baby's mouth, and the baby would eat the sweet potato. And I stood there watching this, and I thought to myself, I am in another world.
Yeah.
I'm in a world that very few people have seen up to this point outside of China.
Absolutely.
And it's a day I marked with a mental vision that I'll never forget as long as I live.
Well,
you know?
What a remarkable experience. Yeah. Well, did you eat your sweet potato?
I ate my sweet potato, which was great. And then, Michelle, we walked around the corner, and I told you this story before, and there was this meat sitting on this, like a tree stump. Big stump mm-hmm. in the middle of this thing, and there was some guys with machetes or hatchets, you know, and they were chopping on this meat, and I was looking at it. I couldn't identify whether it was beef or I knew it wasn't pork. It could have been lamb or sheep or something, and there was like a leg, and they were chopping on it, and the line was like going into the Saints game, you know. they had to be literally, I'm not kidding, 1,000 people.
Oh, my goodness.
And the line kept moving like at a funeral or at a wake, you know, and people were walking by, and I said, what is that? And the interpreter said, well, that's the meat. And I said, you mean to tell me this many people lined up as far as I could see? And I'm not kidding. I'm talking about 1,000 people. I said, they're here to buy that little bit of meat? She said, oh, no, 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 sir. She says, forgive me, but they're here to see the meat.
Oh, my goodness.
I want you to think about that for a minute. They weren't there to buy the meat. They were there just to see the meat. because they couldn't afford to buy it. But on their way to the market, they just wanted to see the meat. I mean, it was an incredible time. But anyway, talking about sweet potatoes, I learned something about sweet potatoes that day, that not only was the nourishment of a nation, but it had a practical purpose as well in this winter time to keep them warm and feed the little children. Anyway, remembering that, y'all, I remember also first tasting this recipe that I'm going to give you at a Soul restaurant on Airline Highway in North Baton Rouge called The Table Is Bread.
Remember that? Great place. Oh, yeah.
Especially interesting on the buffet line that day. And if you hadn't been to The Table Is Bread on Airline Highway near the airport in Baton Rouge, you are missing a piece of Louisiana history, in my opinion. The cook there, Miss C. That's what you go by, Miss C. She was on my television show, by the way. She prepared sweet potatoes or candied yams in a way I've never seen before in my life, using only four ingredients, and I can tell you, spectacular. And this is going to be on the website. She took six large yams, peeled them, and sliced them into quarter-inch slices. So think of these big, giant Texas fries. That's basically what they look like. She took about 4 cups of sugar and divided it in half, 1/4 pound of butter, 1/4 pound of vanilla extract, a pinch of cinnamon, nutmeg. That was it. Like I said, once the yams were sliced, she put the yams into a large Dutch oven with half of the sugar. So figure about 2 cups of sugar. Covered it with just about 1/4 inch of water. She didn't want too much water in it. Brought it to a nice medium boil just to get a good boil going. And once the boil got into the pot and it was boiling, she timed it for 7 minutes. She said, do not overcook the sweet potatoes. Remember, they fries at this point. So if you cook them too long, they're going to fall apart. Hurry and throw them into a colander. Drain them very quickly. And then back into that same pot that you're draining out, you're going to add butter, the remaining sugar, which is another 2 cups, the vanilla, and then you're going to put that little pinch of cinnamon and nutmeg, and then you're going to bring that to a rolling ball. The butter and the sugar is going to melt. And remember, you only have a 1/4 pound stick for those 6 yams. Then you're going to have about 1/4 cup of vanilla, and of course that 2 cups of sugar will make a, you know, a good cup of liquid. And you're going to stir all of that around, and as I say, you're going to add that cinnamon and nutmeg to it at that point, and you're going to allow that to cook only for about 10 to 15 minutes to create this nice syrup. And you're going to allow them to sit, Michelle, in that pot covered with the hot syrup for about 2 hours before serving. You're not cooking them anymore. You just made that syrup. You're bubbling hot. And 10 minutes, you're going to just cook them like that, move them off, put the lid on the pot. 2 hours, you cannot imagine the flavor that you're going to see on those yams and taste.
Delicious.
Oh, unbelievable. Anyway, y'all, all recipes on the website, jfalls.com, along with other great recipes. And remember the book, Recipes from the Root Cellar. You want to go get that one for your library. We'll be back next week. And keep a sweet potato in your pocket. It's good luck to you.